Hyperion to a Saturn.
Welcome to the 14th episode of Hyperion to a Satyr, the Fire and Water Podcast Network's Hamlet podcast. I'm your host, Siskoid, your guide on a scene-by-scene deep dive look at Shakespeare's masterwork through the lens of not only the text, but many film, television, comics, and music adaptations. And today we continue Act 2, Scene 2 with the fishmonger scene as Polonius boards Hamlet, or is it the other way around? More than any other in the play, this is the sequence that led to this project. It's a fun scene in which Hamlet plays the madman for Polonius's benefit, taking the piss, as it were, by transmuting his impatience with the older man's tediousness into rather mean-spirited teasing. Two repetitions, words, 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 and accept my life, can be said to have inspired Hyperion to a Satyr. Each actor's interpretation either giving different line readings to each repeated meme, or an overall reading of the line has become my favorite part of watching any new iteration of Hamlet. So let's look at the text itself before going any further. As Polonius approaches Hamlet and asks him if he recognizes him, Hamlet famously calls him a fishmonger. Now, a fishmonger is a colloquial term for a pimp, a rather rude one when you think about the etymology. Either Hamlet knows that Polonius aims to use his daughter against him, or irony is at work. It also supports the idea that Hamlet has bedded Ophelia, as do many other sexually suggestive lines throughout the play. Then comes a quick exchange about honesty. To be honest, as this world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000. The play is very much interested in the idea that everyone is an actor. Here, Hamlet acts the fool, and Polonius patronizes him. Both are searching for the truth, but neither show their true selves. As in the beauty-honesty exchange that comes later, Hamlet here says that he'd rather Polonius admit he's a fishmonger than keep up pretenses. Avowed criminals are at least honest, in that they do not pretend to be innocent. More sexual innuendo. For if the sun breed maggots in a dead dog, being a god, kissing carrion, have you a daughter? Let her not walk in the sun, conception is a blessing, but as your daughter may conceive, friend, look to it. Hamlet again suggests that he has had his way with Ophelia, though naysayers can justify it as simple cruelty towards the father. However, the potential pun between sun in the sky and son, a male child, may suggest more. Hamlet creates a disturbing image in which he compares children to maggots and women, Ophelia, Gertrude, to carrion, a dead dog specifically. There is a streak of self-loathing in this, even if Hamlet may sarcastically be comparing himself to the sun and a god. If Gertrude is the carrion, then he is a maggot. If Ophelia is the carrion, then he is a breeder of maggots, and warns Polonius against himself. In the broader picture, what is bred in Elsinore is decay. Hamlet warns that everyone's actions are leading to tragedy, including his own. Of course, Polonius doesn't get it. Polonius, in an aside, goes, "How say you by that? Still harping on my daughter. Yet he knew me not at first. He said I was a fishmonger. He's far gone, far gone. And truly, in my youth, I suffered much extremity for love. Very near this." It's the first we hear of Ophelia's mother. Well, possibly. And an actor could use it as justification for why Polonius is so adamant that Hamlet's madness stems from deflected love. Polonius's ego is in play here as well. He suffered very near this, an attempt to equate himself with Hamlet, to put himself on the royal's level. After previously critiquing Hamlet's writing style in the earlier sequence, he suggests that he was as deeply in love as Hamlet and as mad as Hamlet. The next exchange has Hamlet willfully misunderstand questions, and it creates a bit of comedy. He plays more than the fool in this scene. He plays the fool with a capital F, the character present in both Greek and Elizabethan drama who acts the clown but tells the truth, usually escaping punishment for the latter thanks to the former. In this sequence, we have Hamlet doing just that, though he is safe for other reasons, of course. He tells Polonius exactly what he thinks, but the veil of madness means he may not be taken seriously. As the scene continues, Hamlet even prophesizes his own death. "Will you walk out of the air, my lord? Into my grave." And Polonius thinks it's all very accidental that Hamlet's replies are, as he calls them, pregnant. The mention of pregnancy has not fallen on deaf ears here. Shakespeare, through Hamlet, has just underlined the power of words. They're infectious. One character says something that influences the dialogue of others, and maybe he's showing how Polonius can easily be manipulated. At the very end, Hamlet may be letting go of the pretense when he lets out an exclamation about these tedious old fools. He's commenting on the exchange, though if Polonius is still present, and in the text he is, it's one more mad barb aimed in his direction. But as Hamlet's attitude changes in the next sequence, with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, it's safe to assume he was putting on a show in this one. On to adaptations. Branagh explained that Hamlet is putting an antic disposition on in this scene. When he is first seen reading, he keeps Polonius and the royals in the corner of his eye, and when Polonius boards him, Hamlet scares him with a death mask. So he was well prepared for this meeting, even if you'll find it rather annoying. The mask is a nice touch, part of the overall fatalism of the sequence, supported by other lines, "into my grave," "accept my life," and so on, and invoking the graveyard scene that comes much later. Hamlet's feigned madness allows him to be mercurial with Polonius, sometimes angry that he does not admit to being a fishmonger, for example, sometimes serious, sometimes silly. He uses the repeated lines in the scene to make those changes evident, giving each repeat a twist. It strikes me that these have a threefold use. One is to allow Hamlet to quickly change his delivery to simulate insanity. Another is to imply Polonius is a dense or obstinate man who needs things repeated to understand them. And a third, more metaphorical, is to tell the audience that Hamlet is a complete character who is never just one thing. This is an important point to make about Shakespeare's mature drama and how it made a change from the cartoonish theater of his era, from archetypal representations to psychological individuals. So when he says words, 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 each word is different.
Words. Words.
Words.
The first is bored with the question, the second makes the answer obvious and the questioner stupid, and the third is completely mad as Hamlet twists his mouth bizarrely around each sound, deconstructing the word, word. Not that he really reads. His slanders seem his own, looking at Polonius as if composing them on the spot. He reads Polonius, not the book. I haven't mentioned yet the crab metaphor he uses, but it seems to me, among other things, that it continues the play on disjointed time. Going backwards in time is physically impossible, though any murder mystery is essentially a mental game of time travel. We revisit the past to see what really happened. The disjointed temporality of the play could be a manifestation of that straddling between the past, the dead father, and the future, the prince's aborted ascension. As Polonius sweats through the conversations, stopping for asides often to take a break from Hamlet's not-so-veiled attacks, the characters migrate to the exterior of Elsinore, a transition to the next sequence. We're reminded of their individual status here, because Polonius is forced to follow Hamlet into the snow, only to ask to take his leave. It's not enough that the prince walk away from him, so it's also an indication that Polonius doesn't pick up on things quite as deftly as he believes. And finally, we have the second repeated line in the sequence.
"Accept my life. Accept my life. Accept my life."
Again, Branagh gives each repeated meme its own reading. The first is the more neutral, voice cracking slightly, but not really making a point with it, except perhaps to himself. Does he give away too much? Perhaps that's why he decides to make it part of his mad speak. The second is said in a hushed and serious tone, a threat. The third, completely loopy, using the kind of sing-song voice with which you would tell spooky campfire stories. Though there is a method in it, Polonius isn't equipped to discern just what is real, what is implied, and what is Hamlet's feigned lunacy. The more serious readings are forgotten and smothered by the mad ones that follow them. Olivier's Hamlet is far less loony, his madness manifesting itself as deep depression or else through his words. In this sequence, he's aloof and superior, speaking to Polonius always from a higher vantage point. Again, the idea of status is presented, and though minor cuts keep Polonius from comparing his lovesickness to Hamlet's, there is a sense that this man should not try to match or keep up with the prince. He thinks he can, early on narrowing his eyes when he believes he has confirmation about his daughter's role in this, but the staging never allows him to win. Polonius is always looking up and Hamlet looking down. The slanders are directed entirely at Polonius, Hamlet's eyes never moving to the book. He's in control here. That higher walkway also plays delightfully with the phrase walk out of the air, as Hamlet seems to walk on it, while Polonius is visually in a deep grave. The first aside is done away with in favor of Polonius running back to the royals, hidden behind a piece of scenery, to deliver his lines to them instead of us. This live report does little to change the scene except to make him look more clownish. As for the sequence's key repetitions, Olivier chooses to deliver each as part of the same line, in the same tone. Words, words, words is one line, not three. And his only flourish is to show the book from afar as proof of what he says.
Words, words, words.
Except my life is spoken thrice as he walks off stage, obvious melancholy in his voice, but with very little variation in his tone.
Except my life. Except my life. Except my life.
There's lassitude there, that of a character who is tired of life. And while it is theatrical in that he raises his voice so that the audience may hear him, Polonius has already run off. It's not for his sake. Must we assume that here he is finally speaking his truth? That would make cool, collected, aloof Hamlet the act, and depressed Hamlet his true self. Is this Hamlet madder alone than when he plays at being mad? Jacoby's Hamlet walks in on Polonius and the royals, reading and feigning madness. This is a very different staging from the usual scurrying away, allowing Hamlet to interact with his parents in this state. He makes a show of being repulsed by and afraid of his mother, but his furtive looks provide proof that this is an act. He puts a lot into his gestures, for example, actively seeing things he mentions as metaphor, pointing to God and then to Carrion. Carrion that shockingly makes him think of asking about Ophelia. This is a character trait he picks up from other places in the play, such as when he makes Polonius look at clouds. But of course, it's in his interpretation of the words that Jacoby shines most. He gives every line its own nuance. For example, his God have mercy, usually an annex to his well, usually meaning thank the Lord, yes, I am well, becomes a show of exasperation with Polonius.
Well, God have mercy.
His words, words, words starts out as a strange realization that he is reading words, followed by disgust that that's all they are.
Words. Words. Words.
Jacoby turns the line into a precursor to Hamlet's distress when he must unpack his heart with words. For Hamlet, while words are his greatest gift and weapon, they are not enough to express his being, a central irony of the character. Hamlet actively dislikes being bound by his author's words, which is why we often talk about him getting away from Shakespeare. From moment to moment, Hamlet's attitude may change. At Between Who, he becomes conspiratorial, a parody of Polonius's obsession with hypersurveillance. At Into My Grave, where other actors have made the line sarcastic, Jacoby makes his Hamlet feign great fear and anguish, as if he were both misunderstanding Polonius and taking him at his word. He lets out a little laugh, lascivious ooze, and injects comic pauses, for example, when reading the slanders, as if to confirm the words, using Polonius as a template. Except My Life becomes a full-blown suicide attempt, again for show, putting his dagger to his stomach and threatening to push it in.
Accept my life. Accept my life. Accept my life.
Polonius's reaction is to quickly walk away, afraid perhaps of being accused of murdering Hamlet or of pushing him into suicide. As soon as he runs, Hamlet stops this pretense, but it is a dark, cruel joke he revisits more seriously in the to be or not to be speech. In Zeffirelli's adaptation, at the end of the previous sequence, Mad Hamlet walks into the lobby, ripping pages out of his books and throwing them away. But the fishmonger scene actually occurs in the library. When Polonius walks in, Hamlet climbs to the top of the shelves, underscoring his elevated status, both as a prince and as a character, just as Olivier did. We also may note here that Hamlet wears only one boot, part of his disguise as a madman. Polonius thinks himself clever, picking up a book like he's there only by coincidence, but he never reads much of anything, and that includes Hamlet. The actors keep the scene light, laughing at misunderstandings and wordplay, though Polonius sobers up when his daughter is mentioned.
Still harping on my daughter. What do you read, my lord?
Words?
Words has Hamlet looking through his book as if to check on its contents, then on the final word, confirming this fact to Polonius and inviting him to climb up the ladder to get closer to him, to his truth. Upon reading the slanders, he rips the dishonest page from the book and throws it, crumpled, at Polonius's head. He follows up on go backward by pushing the ladder back with his foot, causing Polonius to fall. All of this is playful, if cruel. Polonius scurries off, afraid for his safety, and as he stumbles, Hamlet throws out an almost mocking, accept my life.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I will more willingly part with all. Accept my life. Accept my life. Accept my life.
Polonius reaches the door, but stops at another except. Will Hamlet say something else? Something more serious? No, as we know, it is again my life. And when Polonius is gone, Hamlet realizes that what he said in jest is the truth. The last repetition, softly spoken to himself, reveals how far he is truly willing to go in his quest for revenge. It's a great moment. In a final gesture to punctuate the scene, he drops his book from on high and it hits the floor with a satisfying sound. Though this version of the scene is lighter than others, and the fatalism of some lines underplayed, that fatalism resounds in that final moment. In Hamlet 2000, this sequence appears before Polonius' talk with the royals, and so gives it a different spin. In this version of the play, Polonius checks on Hamlet before going to his parents, and appears smarter for it, even getting the jump on a startled Hamlet in stark opposition to other portrayals that have Hamlet sneaking up on the older man, one eye over the edge of his book. And of course, there is no book here. Instead, Hamlet is viewing one of his video diaries, one that contains part of the speech that discusses Claudius taking part in the king's rows. So oft it chances in particular men. Not only does Polonius surprise him, but he has also glimpsed something of Hamlet's interior monologue. Hamlet is less mad here than he is angry with himself, and trying to cover it with feigned madness, throwing Polonius off the scent by mentioning his daughter.
Have you a daughter?
I have, my lord.
Let her not walk in the sun. Conception is a blessing, but as your daughter may conceive. Friend, look to it.
The use of the video diary also means we don't get words, sadly, which also means the slanders are absent. Not for the first time in the film, and a good 9 years before the Tenet version, security cameras are used to cover the scene and give the sense of hyper-surveillance that in Elizabethan drama is the purview of heiresses. Polonius speaks his asides to this camera. Well, who is watching? Not the king, certainly, because Polonius hasn't yet informed him of his suspicions. His own video diary, then, using Elsinore's internal network? Or us, if you want to get postmodern about it. When he catches up to Hamlet, the prince hides a gun, throwing a shadow over his next line about walking into his grave. Just before the sequence's final repetition, Hamlet pops his head out of the corridor and is himself repeated in the mirrored wall. An image of a man with two sides to his personality? Or is it that Alice-like he walks through the looking glass and into the fantasy of his revenge?
Accept my life. Accept my life. Accept my life. Accept my life.
Though the first "accept my life," as usual, is spoken to Polonius, the next shot has Hamlet repeating the line three times. So one more than in the play, as voiceover, even as he walks through his uncle's offices with his gun. Shades of the confessional scene that comes later. This time, Hamlet cannot do the deed because Claudius isn't there. He's in the pool upstairs. Hamlet 2000's protagonist appears at that moment quite capable of carrying off his revenge. Or is it all fantasy, since no one notices or reacts? The idea is that the more the play progresses, the more time Hamlet has to reflect on his actions, the less he's able to commit murder. A crime of passion is possible for him, but he can't intellectually commit to such an act. Though the text itself does not feature such a scene, this idea nonetheless runs through the play. Hamlet is, in a way, about morality, as an artifact of reason. When Claudius is able to kill his own brother for passion's sake, the Gertrude defense, Hamlet, the university student, cannot commit murder once he starts verbalizing his emotions and condition. At the end, he only kills once he's incensed by the sword fight and his mother's murder. Hamlet's killings are done in anger, and though he's intellectualized them a priori, they are crimes of passion when they finally occur. Looking at experimental Fodor now, as Polonia speaks to the royals, Hamlet and Horatio walk in on them, as well as Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Instead of an intimate conversation between Hamlet and Polonia, it happens in this tightly packed group. This certainly makes Hamlet seem crazier, though the fact that Horatio is also there belies this idea. Hamlet is mocking Polonia and the rest of the court openly, and Horatio looks on amused. I'm not complaining about Horatio being included in many more scenes, turning her and Hamlet into a cruel double act, but I do wonder about the pair's thinking. If Hamlet is trying to appear insane, then having his best friend as an open accomplice defeats the purpose. Of course, in Fodor's film, all the characters appear insane, so it's possible the distinction is that Hamlet is dangerously insane. The royals might still be able to believe that Horatio humors her friend, but that she doesn't realize he's dangerous. Fodor's choices do sometimes tend to create more problems than the problem play already has. So, Hamlet walks in and starts sniffing Polonia, making the fishmonger comment an even ruder proposition than usual, or perhaps restoring that rudeness, since contemporary audiences no longer register it. Fodor plays up the gender change here, for example, making Hamlet slap Polonia's bottom on "Friend, look to it." His closeness and varied comments, turned against a woman rather than an old man, lend a threatening sexual charge to the sequence. The implication is that Hamlet threatens his lover's sister with sexual violence. As for the text, the gender is sometimes changed and sometimes isn't. Hamlet says, "So honest a woman," but then calls her "sir," and says that to be honest, as the world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000. He even emphasizes it. This does connect to Hamlet's mistrust of the women in his life. He also questions Ophelia's honesty and, of course, feels betrayed by his mother. In other words, one man in 10,000 is honest, but no woman ever is, in his opinion. Again, a modern staging does away with the book, with words, 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 and with the slanders, which would have had to be completely rewritten since Polonia is not an old man, done away with as well. In this case, we also get only one "accept my life" in a mock serious tone following a more clownish answer to Polonia asking to take her leave.
"You cannot take anything from me that I will more willingly part with all. Accept my life."
Though the characters in the room may be able to dismiss it as mockery, everything else he says and does seem to fall into that category, the audience may infer he's serious because we've already seen the "to be or not to be" speech recorded on a reel-to-reel in an earlier scene. Then comes a transition to the next sequence, the child Hamlet dancing and singing in a yellowishly glowing flashback. This lyrical image may represent Hamlet's victory over Polonia in the preceding sequence and the sense of play that inspired his behavior. Despite his grief and the revenge that is to come, Hamlet at this point seems to be having fun with his feigned madness. And this is true of many stagings. There's a major structural difference at this point in Gregory Doran's version of the play. The fishmonger scene now occurs after To Be or Not to Be and Hamlet's staged encounter with Ophelia. This means that he's already angry at Polonius and his meddling, but also that Claudius has already rejected Polonius's thesis about love-induced madness. It gives Hamlet more reason to toy with Polonius, and in the latter's case, either more reason to try and prove his point, or simply a more obvious inability to analyze a situation. The way this is played, I'd say the latter. Placing the scene back-to-back with the Hamlet-Ophelia sequence also creates some staging opportunities. Claudius is still behind a two-way mirror, and Hamlet sticks his face on the glass, trying to see him there. It also gives Hamlet the opportunity to pick up the book Ophelia was reading, so that Hamlet is turning the staging back on Polonius. The older man, of course, doesn't understand the meeting is just as staged as the previous one. The structure also asks a question regarding why Hamlet came back to the scene of the crime. He's just thrown Ophelia around, been very cruel to her, and done it in front of the cameras. So he knows he's being watched, though not from so near. He leaves, then returns. Why? Is he coming back to comfort Ophelia, having calmed down, or to take her into his confidence, or is he specifically returning to catch Polonius, or even Claudius, in the act of mopping up, and to further confuse the conspirators? Hamlet has a good crazy act going in this sequence, while Polonius makes all his asides directly to camera. This trick can be off-putting, but somehow makes the man seem more senile here. I'm not sure if it's an effect of our knowing actors shouldn't look directly into camera, and so a mistake in our minds. But it seems more unhinged than simply staring into the distance and speaking to oneself. The barefoot Hamlet is on his back and has the book sitting squarely on his face by the time Polonius asks him what he's reading. This is a doubly clueless question, as first, it's the book Polonius himself might have given Ophelia to read, and second, Hamlet is merely covering his eyes with it, not reading. The answer is our first triple repetition.
Word. Word. Word?
The first here is a plain statement of fact, the second over-enunciated, not unlike Branagh's third, and the last is asked as a question, a timid one, like, is that the right term? As if Polonius has shaken Hamlet's faith in his answer. Good comic timing on the slanders too, with each line, Hamlet pauses to look up and check on their veracity as Polonius gets more and more visibly insulted. The exchange subverts many of the usual stagings by placing Hamlet in a lower physical position to Polonius's. But this is ironic. Despite being in a prone position, Hamlet dominates here. He attacks Polonius, who, in turn, cannot defend himself, only retreat. David Tennant finally stands up at the end and has one of only a couple of what I call doctorish moments in the entire performance. When checking on Polonius's lack of wit, he has an evaluating, well, moment. That is very Doctor Who.
And that they have a most plentiful lack of wit. Well.
And then on the crab line, he grows distracted and walks away. Indeed, that is out of the air, is made part of the pregnant aside here, which makes Polonius seem even goofier as he attempts to show the audience how perceptive he is. Which leads us to the second repeated line, except my life.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I would more willingly part with all, except my life. Except my life. Except my life.
Very well, I
don't want. He's tedious, all fools.
Now this time, the first is a tense, tragic warning, in earnest. The second shows contempt for that life. In the third, he starts shambling towards Polonius, distorting his face like a monster or maybe a member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. It's a parody of his own feigned madness, taking his act to a ridiculous extreme. And again, Polonius fails to properly gauge the situation and runs off, taking the act for the truth. Hamlet almost screams his, these tedious old fools, exasperated. And yet Polonius doesn't realize he's being played. Comic book-wise, it's difficult to convey the comedy of the scene, and the original Classics Illustrated doesn't even try, though perhaps it was removed to avoid getting into the fishmonger pimp metaphor. So in this version, Polonius and Claudius conspire to send Ophelia to meet Hamlet, and though the to-be-or-not-to-be speech immediately follows, their plan comes to fruition thereafter without the benefit of this scene. Tom Mandrake's adaptation retains the sequence, but makes deep cuts into it, ending it before Polonius asks Hamlet what he's reading. This removes much of Hamlet toying with Polonius, and all my favorite lines. Well, this is a largely humorless adaptation, Mandrake's facial expressions and atmosphere being better suited to anxiety and anguish. His Hamlet is deadly serious, and his Polonius, a miserable old man, bewildered and saddened by events. We lose nothing of the plot, of course, and has Rosencrantz and Guildenstern show up earlier than usual before Polonius can get even more insulted, which, in this vision, sometimes seems unduly harsh. Halliday's fishmonger scene in the rock opera does away with Polonius entirely and makes it about Hamlet's reading, and in so doing, gives us a reflective, personal song that intersects with various ideas found in the play. The song is called Je lis, or I read.
Quand la vie est jolie, jolie, jolie. Quand il fait triste et qu'il fait gris, jolie. Quand je m'ennuie seul dans mon lit, je lis. Quand même les rêves me fuient, je lis.
When life is pretty, pretty, I read. When it is sad and it is gray, I read. When I'm alone in my bed, I read. When even my dreams desert me, I read. When I look for a forgotten corner, I read. When I need an alibi, I read. When they trumpet the kill, I read. When I lose the taste for life, I read. When I read, I read, I read what?
Demo!
Words. The short song has Hamlet reading, rain or shine, homogenizing a life which he will later compare to a prison. Most of the lines speak to his fatalism, undercutting the hopefulness of that first line in which the near homonyms, joli, pretty, and joli, I read, are playfully confused. It gets darker from there. The song could almost be sung with joli, pretty, in place of joli, I read, throughout, extending the irony. Is Ophelia on Hamlet's mind still? Is his loneliness, colored by his reading books, to use Polonius's words in a later scene, making his mind wander from the page to the love of his life? There may lie the contempt one might understand from the punchline. What do I read? Words. Just words. I'm reminded of the phrase Jonathan Swift wrote on the envelope containing a lock of his dead wife's hair. Only a woman's hair. The words Hamlet reads are meant to be a refuge, but in no way do they replace the relationships he has broken off. Without the comic context of the Hamlet-Polonius interplay, words, words, words takes on some of the meaning behind the what a rogue and peasant slave am I speech, in which Hamlet is outraged that he must unpack his heart with words. Or the earlier speech on how his grief cannot be properly contained in actions that a man might play. The song reveals a possible staging where words, words, words can be pronounced in an aside to take on a more personal meaning. And that ends our look at Act 2, Scene 2, Part 3. Next time, Scene 2 continues when it's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern's turn to talk to the prince. In the meantime, if you have thoughts on this particular episode, please head over to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Leave them there. And if you like this content, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/fwpodcasts. Thanks for listening, and I hope you, dear listener, will return for Act 2, Scene 2, Part 4, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.